eyes flying in different directions as his skull burst apart, brains and hair blowing across the ground.
The Baron. Not anymore, dolt.
Glassman handed the smoking blaster to a waiting sailor. The man immediately passed the captain a fresh blaster and began to reload the spent weapon. Staring at the still body, Glassman was surprised to discover that he didn't feel any shame or remorse. There was no shock or revulsion at the sight of Chilling, like before. In fact, deep inside, the former healer had to admit that he liked it, the taking of a life by force. He had used his healing skills to avoid fighting, to make himself far too valuable to ever risk in combat, and whichever side won would always need the services of a healer. He had tried to be beyond violence, not from the love of life, but from the fear of losing his own. Since childhood, Glassman had been terrified of being hurt. Just a sniveling coward, yellow to his bones. But on this mission for Kinnison, he found that new doors were opening inside his mind, and the rush of a chill was becoming a delight, only equaled by the release of sex. Something deep inside the man rose to fight off the growing madness, tried, and failed. Glassman felt its departure, and stood very alone in the middle of the vill, knowing that with this death, he had crossed a line and would never be the same again.
Colonel Mitchum!
Hobbling through the crowd of busy slaves, the sec chief stopped a few yards away from the captain. He glanced once at his aced baron, then didn't give the headless corpse another thought.
Yes, sir.
Mitchum rested awkwardly on his crutch. The colonel was unshaved, having stood watch with his men through the long night. His clothes were filthy, a leg and an arm stiffly wrapped in bloody bandages. The gun belt from around his waist was slung across his chest in the manner of a bandolier, the holstered flintlock in easy reach of his good arm.
Ryan gave you those wounds.
Yes, sir, he did.
Find Ryan before he leaves this island, and he is yours to punish for a day. Execute the others on the spot. Understand me? No rape, no games, just put lead in their head.
The words "or else" weren't said aloud, but Mitchum clearly heard them spoken anyway.
Then I become Baron here?
There was a momentary pause.
If you find Ryan, yes. Until then, I'm in charge.
Deal. Give me his revolver.
Mitchum jerked his chin at the dead Baron. Glassman gestured, and one of the local sec men removed the gun belt from the body and gave it to the colonel. The cracked leather was speckled with gray and red, but he didn't care. He was going to be the new Baron here. Mitchum draped the gun belt over his other shoulder, the two different blasters crisscrossing his chest.
They have the Juggernaut, and if they drove over the grasslands, they could be anywhere on the island by now.
Mitchum checked the draw on the S&W 22 caliber revolver.
Ryan had mentioned wanting a boat. There's only three vills on this island to steal one. Cargoville burned their boats because of the plague. Ryan and his people told us about it. Ours are too well guarded, which leaves Cascade.
Teams of men began to drag the first of the felled trees into the vill.
Never heard of the place.
Mitchum grinned.
Little vill to the south. Mostly pre-dark ruins built on top of a waterfall. Bitch to see from the ocean. The mist from the fall sort of hides it from sight.
Glassman wasn't overly disturbed by the news. Kinnison knew about the dozens of vills scattered through the Thousand Islands that remained hidden to avoid paying tribute to him. None was very big or of any military importance, aside from the armed dockyard of the pirate fleet.
How far away is it?
5 days on horseback, 2 by sea. You have to arc far around our island if you're going south to avoid the reefs. Can't take the northern route at all unless you're willing to pay the toll.
Pirates?
Glassman felt a rush of excitement over the prospect of battle. Scratching at his stubble, Mitchum frowned.
Wish they were. Those we could handle. An old deeper lives off the north shore. It might be safe. He sleeps a lot, but when he wakes up hungry...
Fair enough. Get your men ready. We leave in an hour.
The taste of ashes filling his mouth from the smoke, Mitchum hawked and spat.
South it is.
For us. But where that wag can roll, horses can run. You're to take troops straight across the island while we steam around. Then we'll crush them between us in a two-sided attack at Cascade.
Should work. If you give us some firebirds.
The captain turned his head sideways, as if looking away from the sec man, but his eyes never left Mitchum.
You want more, and yet the records I was given by the Lord Baron say this vill owns 8 already.
Not anymore.
Mitchum's hands clenched into hard fists.
They've sort of been stolen.
As the miles rolled by, the companions ate a cold meal from MRE packs, their blasters close at hand. On a couple of occasions, they saw more of the muties staggering about in the soggy fields, then a pack of them ripping apart a drowned possum. At the first hint of the noisy wag's badly tuned engine, the stickies swarmed after the vehicle, but were easily outdistanced. Keeping a careful watch on the dashboard, Christie balanced the rising engine temperature against getting away from the stickies. She took a life only when necessary, and would rather bypass the muties than brutally run them over. After a few hours, Jack took Christie's place behind the wheel, and later on in the day, Ryan replaced him. Each shift was kept short, as steering through the thick mud was exhausting work. Half blind from the dirty windshield, each driver had to stay alert for buried logs and rocks, holding onto the steering wheel with both hands to keep from losing control.
How are we doing?
Mildred grabbed the luggage rack, bolted to the ceiling, and walked to the front of the school bus. An experienced car driver before being frozen, she was worried about the old engine. It had probably been quite a while since the wag had been driven anywhere, and a trip like this would be hard on a well-maintained vehicle.
Engine is running hot, and the oil pressure is low, but we already knew there was a leak somewhere. You can see blue in the exhaust. Aside from that, the wag is okay. But we better start looking for a place to stop and refuel. The tank is almost dry.
Need bushes, too. Some things can't be done out the window of a moving wag.
Yes, they can. It just ain't very comfortable.
Suddenly, the bus dipped slightly, and the sound of the engine rose in pitch as it revved higher, struggling to compensate. Grinding gears, Ryan pumped the gas pedal and fought to keep the engine operating. But their speed dropped to a mere crawl, and the engine temperature gauge rose alarmingly.
What's wrong? Damage from that sticky we hit?
Ah, fucking mud again.
He revved the engine and shifted to a higher gear. The bus sluggishly wobbled along, then backfired from the rush of fuel.
It's different, thicker or something. Can't seem to get any speed.
Appearing from a clump of bushes, a sticky holding the bedraggled body of a rat watched the long wag roll by and started after it, hooting in delight.
Sinking?
Not mud this time. It's quicksand.
Ryan muttered a curse. A tree branch wasn't going to work on that crap. If they halted to refuel, the wag would get jammed like a misfire in the ejector port. They couldn't stop for any reason.
Get that scope up here. We need to find dry land, and I mean now.
Quickly, Mildred got out of the way, and the armorer went to the front of the wag, the Navy Long Eyes already in his grip. Fully extending the antique, JB scanned the landscape ahead of the struggling wag.
Don't go to the left. I think that's a lake. More mud straight ahead on your 12, but I see trees to the right. Not sure the bus can drive between the trunks, they're so close, but that has to be solid ground.
Ryan adjusted the clutch as the wag backfired again, even louder than before.
Where?
Mile, maybe two. On your 3.
I see them.
Incoming! We got a sticky on our tail!
Don't shoot it. It may be able to reach us because we're moving so slow, but it can't get in. Too well armored.
The boy nodded and put his blaster to a blaster port and tracked the approach of the humanoid creature. It caught the mired bus easily and began to hit the outside armor plating with its suckered hands, desperately trying to find a way in.
Heading for the rear door!
Just then, the handle jiggled and an inhuman face appeared in the grill-covered panel of the exit. Ryan fought to alter the course of the vehicle toward the trees.
Shitfire. I need that window clear to see behind us.
Ace it!
The Browning barked once, and a hot brass casing kicked from the side of the blaster and hit the floor to roll away under the rows of seats.
He's gone!
Ryan could only grunt in reply, both of his hands white-knuckled tight on the steering wheel. Ahead, he could see it was a real forest, just what they wanted. But a mob of stickies was forming between the trees and the companions, almost as if they understood what was happening. Checking over his Lama, Doc looked in that same direction and blanched. There was an army coming their way. 30, maybe 40 of the muties.
Can we go around them? Maybe refuel from inside?
Mildred pulled a box of cartridges from her backpack and stuffed them into a pocket.
Rip up the floorboards or something.
JB thumbed rounds into the S&W M4000 shotgun and laid it aside.
That would only make us sink for sure.
Christie stared out the dirty window.
Engine noise must be pulling in every sticky for miles. Maybe the whole valley.
Jack opened his Colt Python to check the rounds. Satisfied, he closed the cylinder, with a gentle pressure so as not to damage the catch.
Could live here. Wait for prey, like hellflowers and trapdoor spiders.
Mildred checked the load in her own weapon.
Lord, I hope not. Because that would mean it works, and they eat...